Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for April 2014, starting our 29th year. This is issue number 351, and I'm your host, Fred Volby. The address for the DX Audio Service is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. My email address for general inquiries is fvobe, that's F-V-O-B-B-E, at realoldiesradio.com. My telephone number for short calls is 419-228-6223. That number is not to be used for musings or to leave reports for the DX Audio Service. The musings number is 419-741-0205. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. Canadian members is now $30, and the magazine is published on CD. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal, but subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone else's assistance. Before we get into this month's DX Audio Service, I'd like to read a letter to you by Paul Swearingen, who's now the new chairman of the board of the National Radio Club. Allow me to introduce myself, especially to newer members who may not know me. I've been a National Radio Club member since March of 1975. My first official NRC duty was when I volunteered to do the International DX Achievements column and run the awards program, which has since disappeared. I served for a few years as Musings of the Members editor, and then became the publisher of DX News in 1988. I hosted a convention in 1989, and continued to publish DX News for some 22 years. Before retiring from 34 years of teaching, English, Spanish, and journalism, I started writing young adult novels, and now have 8 self-published e-books up on various venues. My health. Most of you know that I'm dealing with cancer. On January 21st, I had half my colon removed, which made me an ex-English teacher with a semicolon. And now I'm undergoing chemo treatments to control the cancer, which metastasized from my colon to my liver. The prognosis is good, and I don't foresee my health being a factor in my ability to head this group and make rational decisions. In fact, I've suggested to all National Radio Club Board of Director members to be thinking of Board of Director replacements in the future. You know, none of us are getting any younger, and I've always been an advocate of young blood to bring in new ideas. National Radio Club Convention. It's getting a little late, but not too late for someone to step up and volunteer. Seriously, if I can do it, you can too. Ideally, 2 people and possibly more would be needed to run a convention, especially if you downsized it a bit from what we've had in previous years. If you volunteer, we'll guide you through the steps. Ernie Wesolowski has an excellent guide, and a number of us can answer your questions. The minimum convention would include arranging for a meeting place, a hotel, a span of time from perhaps Friday through Sunday morning, a banquet on Saturday night with or without a guest speaker, plus the business meeting and auction that evening, and perhaps the quiz on Sunday morning. Tours, assembly of goodie bags, and other time-consuming events I'd consider as optional. And frankly, if we could just sit around and chew the fat all day Saturday, well, I'd be happy. Why not contact Ernie today at NEErnieW, that's NEErnieW, at hotmail.com. Merger. The National Radio Club's listserv had a recent lively discussion about International Radio Club of America, the IRCA, and the National Radio Club merging. probably because this year is the 50th anniversary of the formation of the International Radio Club of America. And by the way, congratulations. And not going to happen. Not as an equal, with compromises, anyway. The IRCA is a strictly democratic organization. The National Radio Club has traditionally been run as a corporation, and indeed is incorporated in the state of Kentucky, with the board of directors making the final decisions as needed. I'd estimate that all but about 25 to 30 of the IRCA members are also National Radio Club members. But a handful of them traditionally have expressed great distress during any talks about mergers. Frankly, I've enjoyed my membership in the IRCA since about 1979, and feel that both clubs are unique enough to offer their choices to those who join either or both. And I'm against a so-called merger as such. Finally, if the board of directors of the IRCA wants to talk merger, we're happy to accept their offer to discuss. So, who's doing what? Wayne Heinen has handed leadership duties to me, but don't call me boss, nor Topeka HQ. We're still diversified. Wayne will continue to handle subscriptions, membership duties, archiving past copies of DX News and posting them on edxn.com, National Radio Club publications, although he'd like to see someone else take over those duties, product sales and PayPal duties, internet hardware liaison to host the listserv and nrcdxas.org and edxn.com, and editing the National Radio Club's AM log. Craig Chris is now fully in charge of EDXN. I continue to supervise the content of the National Radio Club's listserv, although I've invited qualified, level-headed individuals to apply for that position. Test Coordinator. Currently, the National Radio Club and IRCA are looking for a joint test coordinator who would be a member of both clubs. The coordinator should be able to contact stations, explain the nature of tests, and follow up on and validate all test activities with qualified station personnel. News of all tests should be sent to the National Radio Club DX News editor and posted on the EDXN site in a timely manner. If you're interested, you should contact both myself and Phil Bytheway, who's the president of the International Radio Club of America. Phil's address is Phil Techno, that's PHIL_TEKNO, at yahoo.com. My email address is PLSBCBDXER@AOL.com. We're still in need of a college sports editor. We need one immediately. Apply to David Yokas at nrcdxnews@gmail.com. EDXN. We're going to streamline EDXN, removing or combining some redundant forums and adding several more. For example, the formats column has been incorporated into the AM switch, so the formats column should disappear. Varies to be scanned. We could use several more volunteers to help scan varies to be displayed on nrcdxas.org. Apply directly to Wayne Heinen at sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. Finally, my philosophy. The buck stops here. I'm as transparent as I can be. I delegate as needed to the responsible person, editor, board of director member, whatever. I communicate quickly. Best way to contact me is via email at plsbcbdxer@aol.com. I don't argue, but I'd be happy to discuss. I know where the skeletons are. As I stated above, don't call me boss. I'm a leader, but more of a coordinator and facilitator. Finally, let me know if you have any new ideas. If they simply aren't viable, we'll move on to new ones. Thanks for putting your trust in me. Signed, Paul Swearingen, Chairman of the Board, National Radio Club. And I might add to Paul's letter, if you have a problem with your DX audio service, subscription, comment, criticism, whatever, give me a call, write me a letter, or send an email to the address, email address, or telephone number at the beginning of each DX audio service program.
This is the AM Switch.
Hi again, Dave Alpert with the AM Switch. This issue, we have three editions, AM Switch Volume 81, Issues 21 to 23. Let's get to some call sign action. 1150 WGBN, New Kensington, Pennsylvania, is now WMNY. 1250 KTFJ, Dakota City, Nebraska, changes their call to KZOI. Also, according to Ernie Wasilowski, they're relaying KZOY 1520. Look for this call to be snapped up quickly. 1360 WMNY McKeesport, Pennsylvania, changes to WGBN. And finally, 1460 WDDY Albany, New York, changes to WOPG. Applications for new construction permits. The CP for 690 in Black Hawk, South Dakota, has been granted for U7, 50,000 watts day, 350 watts night, and critical hours power of 22,000 watts. The licensee is Bot Communications, so this station will probably be religious. 860 WTZX, Sparta, Tennessee, applies for U1, 950 watts day, and 10 watts night from a new site. Diplexing with WSMT 1050. This replaces a CP for the same parameters that has expired. 1010 KIQI, San Francisco, California, licensed for U4, 10 kilowatts day, 500 watts night, with an expired CP for U4, 35,000 watts day, 15,000 night, now applies for U4, 10 kilowatts day, 15,000 watts night, leaving day power as licensed. Application to modify new station CPs not yet on the air. The 640 CP in Terre Haute, Indiana, moves forward for a new station with U2 250 watts day and night, and an application for U4 4,800 watts day and 1,150 watts night at Piatone, Illinois. Now they apply to amend that application to U4 4,500 watts day and 1,200 watts at night from Piatone. The CP was to expire on February 24th. 1120 WBUR, Coral Springs, Florida. This CP for a new station with U7, 9,500 watts day, 1,100 watts night, and critical hours power of 6,700 watts. Applies to amend their construction permit to U4, 25,000 watts day, and 1,700 at night with a move to Delray Beach, Florida. 1180 KCKQ, Reno, Nevada. Their CP for a new station, U2, 7,500 watts day and 950 at night, applies to modify the CP to U2, 4,000 watts day and 190 night, changing city of license to Sparks, Nevada, and diplexing the towers of KPLY 630. CPs for new stations, expired and deleted. The CP for 1180 in Jacksonville, Oregon, for a station U2, 50 kilowatts day and 1,300 night, is expired and deleted. Up in Mike Dukin land, the 1460 CP in Shawano, Wisconsin, for a new station, U4, 1 kilowatt day, 620 watts night, expired and deleted. And the CP for 1520, Fultondale, Alabama, U4, 6,000 watts day, 250 watts night, is also expired and deleted. These stations going dark. 590 KZHS, Hot Springs, Arkansas, voluntarily surrender their license per a February 7th letter to the FCC. And 950 KSEW, Seward, Alaska, filed a petition for reconsideration of cancellation of their license on February 1st for failure to file a renewal application. Station says it did file on time and has a receipt to prove it. The FCC changed the status to licensed and silent, but has not yet undeleted the call letters. Let's move on to construction permits for existing stations. 1340 KJMU, Sand Springs, Oklahoma. The CP for U1, 500 watts day and 1,000 watts night is on. They had a slight power increase from 450 watts day and 900 watts night. 1410 WZBR, Dedham, Massachusetts' CP for U1, 610 watts day and 25 at night is on. Moving from Brockton, Massachusetts, they have been operating with program test authority and IDing as Dedham for some weeks now. 1420 WAOC, St. Augustine, Florida, the CP for U1, 2,000 watts day, 230 watts night is on the air. CP's built, applications for license to cover and program test authority filed for 1080 WRYT, Edwardsville, Illinois. They've applied for a CP to change to U7, 500 watts day, 2 watts night, and critical hours power of 380 watts. 680 WGES, St. Petersburg, Georgia, applies for license to cover their CP for U1, 930 day, and 165 watts night. And 1230 WSKY, Asheville, North Carolina, has been granted program test authority to use their CP for a new site pending final licensing, remaining U1, 1 kilowatt day and night. New construction permits granted. 1310 WTLB, Utica, New York, granted a CP for U1, 2600 watts day and 38 at night, getting rid of their directional antenna system. They were U4, 5000 watts day and 500 watts night. 1470 WBCR, Alcoa, Tennessee, granted a CP for U1, 1 kilowatt day, 77 watts night from a new transmitter site. 1460 KHOJ, St. Charles, Missouri, is granted a CP for U4, 12,000 watts day and 210 watts night. They were licensed for U4, 5,000 watts day and 210 at night. Application to amend previously granted CP. That's 810 WRSO, Orla Vista, Florida, licensed for U4, 10,000 watts day, 400 watts night, with a CP for U4, 20,000 watts day, and 1,000 watts night. WRSO now applies to modify their CP to U4, 20,000 watts day, and 400 watts night, modifying the day pattern and dropping plans to change the licensed night authorization. Applications for new CPs. 1230 WENY, Elmira, New York, applies for U1, 1,000 watts day, 910 watts night. They were licensed for U1, 1,000 watts day and night, but have been operating with an STA since their tower was damaged by a tornado in July 2012. 1270 WILE, Cambridge, Ohio, applies for U1, 830 watts day and 28 watts night. They're presently licensed for U1, 1,000 watts day, 35 watts night. The reason for the change is a new taller tower about 150 feet from the existing one. 1400 WPCE, Portsmouth, Virginia, applies to move to the towers of WCPK 1600 and WHKT 1650 while remaining U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1580 KNIM, Maryville, Missouri, applies for U1, 480 watts day and 10 watts night. They are licensed for U1, 700 watts day and 7 watts night, but they're moving to a new site co-located with their FM tower. KNIM had a CP for these parameters years ago, and it has been on the air since January 2003, but the previous owners forgot to file a license to cover with the FCC, so the old CP expired. Here's a CP that's expired. 1540 WGRK, Greensburg, Kentucky. They had a CP to move to 1200 kilohertz with D1, 2500 watts, and change the city of license to Jeffersontown, Kentucky. However, the CP expired, and now WGRK remains on 1540 with D1, 1000 watts day, critical hours power of 500 watts. Special Temporary Authority, 650 KPRP, Honolulu, Hawaii, granted an STA with U1, 5,000 watts day and night due to storm damage to their antenna. 660 WORL, Altamont Springs, Florida, granted an STA for U1 200 watts day and night or parameters at variance while implementing its CP from U4 1000 watts day and night to U4 3500 watts day and 1000 watts night. 960 WRNS, Kinston, North Carolina, applies for an STA due to problems with the night pattern. 960 KALE, Richland, Washington, granted an STA for U3, 1,000 watts day and night, night pattern, used 24 hours and parameters at variance due to tower work and transmitter trouble. 980 WKLF, Clanton, Alabama, granted an STA for a temporary antenna. 1190 KNUV, Tolleston, Arizona, granted an STA for pattern at variance due to vandals stealing their copper ground radial system. 1240 KDSK, Los Ranchos de Albuquerque, New Mexico, is granted an STA for yet another temporary tower. 1300 WBOW, Terre Haute, Indiana, granted special temporary authority with U1 350 watts day and 58 watts night from a tower planned for the 640 and 1230 CPs we mentioned. WBOW lost their licensed tower years ago. 1360 WNJC, Washington Township, New Jersey, granted an STA with U1 1250 watts day, 200 watts night using an emergency antenna after tower site vandalism. 1420 WVOT, Wilson, North Carolina, granted an STA with U1 300 watts day, 125 watts night from a temporary site. WVOT lost their licensed site, but has found a new one and will apply for a CP soon. 1440 KVON, Napa, California, granted an STA with U1 1250 watts day and 250 watts night due to transmission line failure. 1480 WVOI, Marco Island, Florida, granted an STA for U4 250 watts day and night with parameters at variance as the station was observed operating with an elevated amount of reflected power. 1570 WIZK, Bay Springs, Mississippi, granted an STA for D1 1000 watts. According to the station, transmitter problems prevent full power operation and a silent station needs to broadcast to preserve its license. 1670 KNRO, Redding, California, granted an STA with reduced power for unspecified reasons. And 1690 KYOK, Conroe, Texas, was licensed on 1140 with a CP to move to Katy, Texas. Now KYOK applies for an STA to broadcast from a temporary site near Katy to establish ground conductivity measurements, and they're operating from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Time with 5,000 watts on 1690. These stations have informed the FCC that they are silent. 580 WYHM, Rockwood, Tennessee. They've been off since March 9th, saying they have ground radials damaged from traffic, mowing, and land erosion. 1460 KARR, Kirkland, Washington, has been off the air since February 28th, when they lost their transmitter site, but they're looking for a new one. 1510 WLKR, Norwalk, Ohio, is silent since February 20th, after an off-site power surge which damaged their transmitter. 1590 WPUL, South Daytona, Florida, silent since February 18th for unspecified repairs. And here's our silent station update list for April. 580 KZMX, Hot Springs, South Dakota, was silent on February 13th and came back on the air, but now they're silent again because the staff quit without notice and new staff has not yet been hired. Anyone looking for a job? 670 WRJR, Claremont, Virginia, is still waiting for parts for their transmitter. 690 KEWI, Benton, Arkansas, is silent pending a sale. 750 WPDX, Clarksburg, West Virginia, is silent again. They've been off since January 25th, awaiting equipment delivery. 1230 WRXK, Rexburg, Idaho, is silent. 1280 WOWZ, Appomattox, Virginia, is off again since February 12th due to financial and technical issues. 1330 KVOL, Lafayette, Louisiana is silent. So is 1390 WZQQ, Hazard, Kentucky. 1450 WKAL, Rome, New York, returned to the air February 23rd, but was heard and reported in DX News more than once in the interim. 1400 WSPG, Spartanburg, South Carolina, was silent due to a collapsed tower, but now they're back on. 1490 WOLF, Syracuse, New York, was silent to allow ample time to transition to a new format. 1490 KFCR, Custer, South Dakota, silent since February when their staff quit without notice and new staff not yet hired. I'm guessing they're co-owned by the 580 station in Hot Springs, South Dakota. 1570 KBRI Brinkley, Arkansas, was silent since October 8th due to their tower being taken down when a garbage truck ran into one of the guy wires. And 1570 WIZK Bay Springs, Mississippi, is back on with an STA. These formerly silent stations just informing the FCC they're no longer silent. 1070 WSCP, Sandy Creek, Pulaski, New York. And 1470 WEVG, Evergreen, Alabama. Last issue, we ran the latest FCC silent list. We're thinking the FCC now listens to the DX audio service as they took the hint and dropped WQOM 1060 from the list. As we pointed out, the station has been on the air for years. Also, Bruce Conti notes that WHFB 1060 and WKAL 1450, both on the FCC silent list, are actually on the air, while Dave Schmidt observes that WSRY 1550 is silent, but not on the FCC list. It just goes to show you that DX Audio Service members have better ears than the FCC. In Canadian news, an application for 580 in Edmonton, Alberta, for a new station has been withdrawn. We suspect this is probably only temporary to make some technical changes. The 700 application in Calgary, Alberta, has been reapplied for a new station with what we believe is U4 50 kilowatts day and 20 kilowatts night, and a gospel format. Keep in mind that Canadian stations have to get approval from the CRTC for formats. The station which was there was CJGN, and we suspect the pattern will be like their old one, which is all northbound. Here's some good news for shortwave radio listeners. 1010 CFRB Toronto, Ontario reports their shortwave relay CFRX 6070 kilohertz. If you can hear this station, why not let them know and tell us about it on the Musings line? And this final item, back in the USA, on February 21st, the FCC denied two petitions for reconsideration stemming from the 2004 construction permit application window, where there are multiple applications that would interfere with each other. The FCC first determines whether it has a dispositive preference for any one application. If so, that applicant gets the first chance to develop the application into a CP and a new station. In 2009 and 2010, respectively, the FCC found dispositive preferences for applications by Black Hawk, South Dakota, U7, 50 kilowatts day, 350 watts night, critical hours power, 22,000 watts on 860. And Springerville, Utah, U1, 10 kilowatts day, 570 watts night on 1580. Another applicant, which has applied for U2, 10,000 watts day and 5,000 watts night on 860 from Orchard Homes, Montana, and U2, 10,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night on 1580 from Lalo, Montana, asks for reconsideration. That has now been denied, clearing away another obstacle to granting CPs to Black Hawk and Springerville. We'll let you know if we have any more on this. And that's it for the April 2014 edition of the AM Switch for the DX Audio Service as we begin the 29th year of the magazine. I'd like to thank all of you for your tips and information, and just want to say, keep them coming. It's what makes this magazine interesting and the most informative publication about broadcast radio. Hey, why not tell a friend to join us? For now, I'm Dave Alpert in Los Angeles. Let's swing it back east to Mark Durenberger, who craved the snow and finally came home to Minneapolis.
Thank you, Dave Alpert. Hey, if you heard this column last month, you heard me pronounce that Neil Kazaros would be here this time. At last August's joint DX convention, Kaz gave a wonderful explanation of how sunrise-sunset maps are used as a tool to predict those rare long-distance catches. We've edited this a bit and tried to correct for microphone problems, but Kaz is about as bad at keeping a mic steady as he is proficient at DXing, so apologies for the inconsistent sound. More important is the fact that as I listened to him once again, I was struck by the fact that there doesn't seem to be an accessible way to get a hold of these maps and get the information off of them if you can't see them. So I'm seriously considering spending part of my spring and summer creating an audio description of what's on these valuable maps. And if that works out, we may do the same with the NRC Night Pattern book so that our blind folks can get better use out of both sets of documents. But before we do that, we want to see if an oral interpretation of the sunset maps in the pattern book would be of value to you. So, a simple request. If you'd like to have these in some form of oral descriptive form, drop a note on the Musings line at 419-741-0205. You don't have to do a muse if you don't want to. Just give us a vote yes, or tell us they wouldn't be of much use to you. Okay, while we wait for your feedback, let's turn back the clock to August 2013, the Joint DX Club Convention in Minneapolis, and DXer Neil Kazaros delivering his thoughts on Chasing Sunset Skip.
As you can tell by what time I arrived today, I'm not going to talk about Sunrise Skip very much, since I don't like getting up, and since I find Sunset Skip to be much more productive. You're trying to catch stations that are on their running their daytime facilities before they switch to their nighttime facilities. And believe it or not, the majority of stations in this country actually do switch to their nighttime facilities. Although I could mention a few offenders that we know don't. When are good times for Sunset Skip? Well, let's call up a map. Let's look at these lines here. The solid lines show the sunset zones as we go across the country. The dashed lines, which are harder to see, show the sunrise zones. In my talk, we're going to be concerned with the sunset zones. Let's look at what happens. I live right here near Chicago. In October, my sunset in Illinois is about 6:15. I try to work toward the west. Let's look out at Colorado here. Sunset in Colorado, 7:15, 7:30. So what do we suppose can happen around 7 o'clock from Colorado? Stuff will start skipping in. Because when you're going to the west, again, we all know how AM propagates. At night, it skips off the atmosphere once it's starting to get dark. Well, we see that especially during the end of the month of October. In Colorado, it is probably getting dark here. Says 7:15, 7:30, but it's starting to get dark around 7. That signal is skipping to Chicago, somewhere probably over Nebraska, Kansas, where it's already dark. So there's no delayer to attenuate the signal. So the stuff starts coming in early. What do I want to try to do from Colorado? I want to try to get, you know, weak, rare stations. So that's one of the kind of things you can do for sunset skip. So the way the FCC calculates sunset times is as follows. They take the sunset time at the transmitter, I believe, for the middle of the month, so October 15th. So what happens in a month like October? By the way, the same thing happens in a month like August, although conditions tend to be much better September, October, November than they are now. At the beginning of October, between the beginning of October and the end of October, you might have, especially at northern latitudes, 45 minutes to an hour difference in sunset. Let's look at, you know, Denver area here. You can see the big difference. At the beginning of October, when I would be listening at 7:15, it would still be light. At the end of October, I've got a great chance of getting the station because it's probably almost pitch black there. That makes a huge difference. So the times we want to try for sunset skip, we want to try in months where there's a big variance between actual sunset times at the beginning and the end of the month. So What's very good is September, I find October better. November can still be good, though there's less variance. December is not much variance between the beginning and end of the month, although it's still okay. But again, at northern latitudes, I mean, it's almost, we don't get much light in December anyway, especially this far north. January has a pretty decent change between the beginning and end of the month. February has a big change. March is another good time. April has a big change, but I find conditions tend to deteriorate by April and May. Let me put the sunset map up here for December. The sunset here in Minneapolis in December is the same time as the sunset in Florida. Huge difference between October. And let's show June. June is not the time when I DXAM. We have guys here from WTFDA, and my recommendation for most of you guys is DX something other than AM in June, like all the E-skip. Now let's look at the way the lines go. In June, because we're up north here in Minneapolis, the sunset here going down this grid looks like it's at about the same time here as it is in New Mexico. This looks like eastern and central New Mexico, so that's just a huge difference. Again, what do I want to do for sunset skip? I want it to be at least dark at the midpoint. Not too good in June. However, there is something I've done when I was a young man and lived in Southern California in June. I lived here in San Diego. Take a look at this. Up here, Oregon, Seattle, BC area, the sunset is like an hour later in June up there than it is in San Diego in Southern California. So, and now Southern California, thankfully, for those that live there, doesn't have much of a thunderstorm problem. And they don't have any real thunderstorm problem in June. So conditions are still okay and quiet. So when I lived in Southern California, I would take advantage of like May, June, and July to work sunset skip up here into this area. Because why? Down here, my locals and stuff had already gone to night facility, so, or it signed off. But these stations up here were still on day power. But from the Midwest, there's really not too many opportunities for sunset skip in June. December, good time to DX, as we all know. And one thing, again, when we're at northern places, Illinois, relatively northern, my place in Wisconsin is right here, north of Milwaukee. That's more northern, still more northern here. Something that I have found viable in December is we try to, or even around Thanksgiving, we can still work sunset skip to the east. Let's look over here. What's our sunset skip time here? 4:30. Let's look here. What's Boston? 3:15. What's Maine? 3:00. Good, you know, bog antennas in Wisconsin. Again, my place is, we had a get together there. Some of you have been there a few years ago, but it's, I'm on a bluff lakefront overlooking Lake Michigan about 150 feet up. That's a really good DX site, and it's very quiet too. From there, I have had in December Maine coming in through Fays, Chicago at 2:00 in the afternoon. When you aim that direction in December, you can get stuff. Even though the sunset in Maine or Boston is, 3:00, 3:15, we're up north at that time of the year, so there's still propagation. So similarly, I know a lot of people want to try to log Vermont or New Hampshire from here or from Wisconsin, and it's going to be very difficult. But if you try in December, you might catch something. But again, my main focus is working to the west, simply because we all know what the station density is like in this country. Let's look here. A lot of stations here in Minneapolis, a lot in Chicago, but let's go east. We have Detroit, Cleveland, Indy, other things in Ohio. We got Pennsylvania with a bunch of stations, New York with a bunch of stations, Boston with a bunch of stations. The station density east is way greater than it is west. So when you aim west, you have less of a station density. There's more chance of getting good, distant, weak stuff. Okay, let's go back to my October map again. Once again, we see looks pretty good in October. 8:30 hits the west coast. And probably, theoretically, the best time for that would be the end of the month. So, and now one thing to say is, for example, if you're looking for sunset skip from some place, okay? For example, let's say we're hoping to get stuff out of Utah. If you're not getting KSL, the big blaster from Utah, you're not going to get sunset skip from Utah. It's just the propagation's not there. Similarly, if you don't have KOA, comes in great from Denver, maybe a couple of the other daytime things in Colorado that can come in really good, like 10-10 and 10-60. If the strong stuff isn't coming in, you're not going to find the weak stuff, because just the propagation is not viable. That's almost a guarantee. So you see, I mean, it's kind of like, you know the map, know what's possible, try to catch it. Or again, if you've got a Perseus, it's still helpful to know what's possible and to be able to know where to go back and listen, so you don't drive yourself crazy listening to every frequency over and over. And to catch something at 7:45, I don't expect an ID on a 5-minute recording. I got lucky and this guy ID'd. When you record across the hour, most stations will ID. As you see, this is not all luck. It's knowing where to be, when to be. And again, I'm saying to guys that don't have a Perseus and have to would be DXing live, or some of you ultralight guys, etc. You do guys are DXing one frequency at a time. And back a couple years ago, before I had a Perseus, I had to do that too. And I studied maps really carefully and sunset maps, and I knew what was going on where, and I knew what to expect for indicator stations along the way. So then I'd say, this is in. Ooh, this is really rare, really good. Okay, so I know to try. Let's try for this. So let's look at something else that the NRC sells and the IRCA Goody Factory sells, etc., and that is the antenna pattern map. And that's a very useful thing for sunset skip. So call up my map, please. This is 1430. I'll show you how I would study a map. I live here. What do we have? We have a station east of me that beams their power to the east. Again, let's look at something big. This is Denver on 1430. The dash line is Denver's day pattern. So they are, Denver on 1430 is 10 kilowatts day power. At night, I don't know what their power is, but they got a very narrow beam up to the north. You might get Denver on 1430 really good if you live in the Dakotas or Manitoba, Saskatchewan, but as far as getting it here, it's a lot harder. However, Denver 1430 does come in as a sunset skip target, because again, non-directional, 10 kW, 800 or 900 miles skip distance, great target. Let's look at what's happening a little later on the map. Again, as we go west, we see Utah. Utah does not have a favorable night or day pattern on 1430 to propagate this direction. There's a big null. I guess they're protecting Denver. They're probably also protecting KRGI in Grand Island, Nebraska. But as we go further west, we see a station in eastern Washington, right here. They've got a pretty favorable pattern. They put a lot of energy out to the east and the northeast and the north. So this station here might be a target. It's called KCLK. It's a sports station in Asotin, Washington. And they beam their signal to a bigger city in Idaho called Lewiston. So that's 5 kW day. I would think that getting 5 kW regionals from West Coast states this far into the Midwest is pretty good. What else could come in on 1430 at sunset? One near Seattle, one in Oregon. I've never got those two stations. But again, those are Omni. I need those stations. But Washington, this one in the day, has a pattern favorable. What happens in December? Let's look. Chicago sunset time, 4:15, 4:30-ish. Florida sunset time, 4:30. Florida panhandle sunset time, where there's a few strong stations. Again, that's the other thing. When you DX to the west, or DX things that are in a later sunset zone than you, your locals and regionals have already switched to lower power, or patterns that don't beam so much at you. This will help you on some frequencies. It might hurt you on others. But in general, the less QRM you have locally on the dial, the better you can do. Again, December's a good time to DX to the south. So what I often do is, at sunset, I've got an antenna aimed south. I use that till about 5 o'clock, 5:15, maybe even 5:30 into Texas. Then I switch to my west antenna for the far west stuff. Now, one thing, Mike mentioned graveyarders. Graveyarders now are, most everybody is 1,000 watts day and night. So there's no advantage to sunset skip on graveyarders. The sunrise-sunset maps have grids. They have lines drawn across them every 15 minutes for the FCC-mandated times for where stations can at sunrise switch to higher day power and day pattern, and at sunset, again, where they're required to switch back to, you know, night power and night pattern. And as we move, these zones run, you know, in an east-west as we move across the country. Now for the blind folks, maybe you guys have something that can, I'm sure you can have something that might be able to read from a computer for you. I mean, I think the FCC site has this information. And also, if you don't have this map handy, Barry McLarnon size, topazdesigns.com/AMBC. You plug in the station call letters, and it tells you the sunrise and sunset times. Very useful and very accurate, and a big help. But as far as sunrise skip to the east, it should work, because again, they're coming back on night power early for us. Like, for example, something like a station in Boston would be going back to its day pattern an hour before sunrise here, because sunrise in Boston is an hour earlier. And the skip point is about halfway. So it works to some extent. But what I find happens at sunrise, again, there's an awful lot of stations around Chicago. And some stations come on, they have pre-sunrise authorizations. So they're supposed to use maybe 500 watts max. Well, a lot of them that come on at 6 a.m. don't. I mean, they just throw full day power on, and that's the end of that. Some of them that don't have this authorized, also, they come on 6 a.m. Some stations supposed to come on 6 a.m. come on earlier. I mean, these stations do what they want, especially in the morning, you know. They want to be on for morning drive time. Why wouldn't they be? When do people listen to the AM radio? Either when they're DXing or when they're driving to work. Or in the summer. They want to come on, they want to get the weather to the farmers, etc. I find Sunrise has far more stations on the air with high power than it should. So it's simply a bunch of QRM for me. So that's why I don't find Sunrise Skip very rewarding. You guys that live further out, I mean, I know John Rieger in Milwaukee. But again, there are less QRM in Milwaukee, as Tim knows, than there is in Chicago. John Rieger finds Sunrise rewarding. I don't find it very rewarding. It's just too many channels are jammed up. Many of the powerful coastal stations on the east and the west coast, they do beam out to sea. So they're protecting other stations. They're covering their city and beaming out to sea. Like something like a lot of stations in Los Angeles, they might have their transmitter a little east of Los Angeles, beam at Los Angeles, you know, put a tremendous signal over the huge populated area, and then they beam it out to sea. Where does it go? Hawaii, Tahiti, New Zealand, Australia.
Thank you, Kaz. Thank you. Neil Kazaras in Minneapolis in August 2013. Mark Dernberger here in the present for the DX Audio Service. And before we leave you, let me repeat our thinking about making local sunset maps and the night pattern book more accessible. As I mentioned, I'd be happy to begin creating an oral description of what's on these valuable documents. If you'd like to have these in oral form, please drop a note on the Musings line at 419-741-0205. You don't have to do a muse if you don't want to. Just give us a vote, yes, or say no, they wouldn't be of much use to you. And as we leave each other this month, we offer our best wishes for a continued great 2014. Next month, we'll be back to continue our Double Delta Antenna project. Remember that? When we were facing west and finding all sorts of new stations. We'll pick that up in the May edition. And until then, good listening, DXers.
Radio disc jockey Porky Chedwick dies. This notice came from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on March 2, 2014. Legendary Pittsburgh radio personality Porky Chedwick died this morning. He was 96. Mr. Chedwick was a trailblazing radio personality whose career spanned decades. He started his career in 1948 at WHOD-AM in Homestead, which later became WAMO. He is credited by many R&B performers for giving them their first airplay. He had been hospitalized recently for surgery. He attended a Roots of Rock and Roll concert in Pittsburgh last week. Mr. Chedwick, who turned 96 last month, worked for many local radio stations and was known for his lively banter that included calling himself the Daddy-O of the Radio and your platter-pushing papa.
I'll tell you, my name's not Ike, but I got a lot of things you like. We're cooking here with the big boss sounds, baby, the Porky Chedwick Grooves. High level. Funded by the greatest used car bargains in Pittsburgh at High Level Chrysler Plymouth, West 8th Avenue in Homestead. Reconditioned like new, used cars are going for the lowest prices ever. Each with a 2-year, 24,000-mile warranty. High Level offers you so much for so little money with a bonded buy used car. Come in and register for a free U.S. savings bond to be given away monthly at the home of the bonded buy, High Level Chrysler Plymouth, just across the High Level Bridge in Homestead. Listen to this great special from High Level Chrysler. A 66 Ford V8 Galaxy 500 convertible, turquoise with a white roof, automatic, power steering, radio and white walls. The full price, $18.95, $200 down, balance 36 payments, $59.98 plus state tax and insurance. All this at High Level Chrysler Plymouth, West 8th Avenue in Homestead.
I want everybody to let your hair down and get with it. If you don't feel like letting it down, take it off. Everything's all right. Hey! Get down with it.
Yeah, baby, we're down with it here. Right down into the nitty-gritty, baby. Porky Chedwick in here, my dear, with a heavy gear. And you're taking me right in your ear. You hear? We're making with a shaking. You cats are... Hey, baby, they call me Ched, and I'm going to teach you how to shake your head. That's what I said. Come on, shake now. You got someone
to hug. In later years, he hosted live oldie shows, bringing back acts whose records he had played decades earlier. I'm Chris Gay for the DX Audio Service.
Several networks hit with huge fines for EAS violations. This article comes from the Federal Communications Commission in a press release rewritten for this news story. Section 325A of the Act and Section 11.45 of the Federal Communications Commission rules and regulations are very specific about using EAS tones. Several big broadcast content providers are now facing huge fines. On March of 2013, the Commission received complaints alleging several companies violated the Commission's rules pertaining to the misuse of the EAS codes or attention signals. This occurred when several entities played EAS tones during a commercial for the movie Olympus Has Fallen, the No Surrender trailer. The first complaint, dated March 4th of 2013, alleges that at 11:30 a.m., the complainant viewed a preview for Olympus Has Fallen on Comedy Central Channel. The complainant states the EAS tones were used in an aerial fast-action preview scene. They commented, "I do not feel Comedy Central should have been allowed to use these tones for commercial exploitation of this movie." The second complaint, dated March 5th of 2013, alleges that on March 4th of 2013, between 4 and 6 p.m., the complainant viewed the trailer for Olympus Has Fallen on ESPN, which seemed to play artifacts of EAS digital data plus some of the two-tone signal. A third complainant, also dated March 5th of 2013, alleges that on that date, at 11:30 p.m., the complainant viewed a commercial for Olympus Has Fallen on the Sci-Fi Channel and used EAS tones. The complainant further stated, "This is misleading, and had our entire family running to the TV to find out what was going on, only to find that it was a commercial. Very tricky, misleading, and potentially dangerous when people get used to tuning out the EAS tones. It should be illegal for anyone but the proper authorities to use EAS tones." The complainant further notes that the tones used in the Olympus Has Fallen trailer was similar enough that one of his children started to quickly get out of the bathtub thinking there was an emergency. They further stated, "Around here in southwest Missouri, we're always on high alert for EAS tones due to tornadoes, especially approaching springtime. It could have been devastating if people learned to ignore the EAS tones, and of course, it's hardly fair to trick people into running to the TV to watch your commercial. Here's a copy of the commercial in question, and we urge you not to allow this to be transmitted in whole or part. but you be the judge.
Most protected building on Earth has fallen.
I am the man in control of your White House.
This is one of the most wanted terrorists in the world.
Open the gates of hell.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Today, we make our stand.
Olympus has fallen. Rated R.
The Federal Communications Commission noted the nature of the EAS violations required particularly serious consideration because, amongst other issues, the violations undermine the integrity of the EAS system by desensitizing viewers to the potential importance of warning tones and therefore implicate substantial public safety concerns. The Federal Communications forfeiture determination in such cases is based on multiple factors associated with the nature of the violation and the violator. For instance, in a similar case, the offending advertisement was transmitted over a single Turner-controlled network. The No Surrender trailer was transmitted on no fewer than three different networks by each of the companies, greatly increasing the potential harm by increasing the potential reach of those transmissions. Nonetheless, no single factor, that is, the number of transmissions, is controlling. When applying the statutory factors concerning the circumstances, extent, and gravity of the EAS violation, we take into account the number of specific factors, including, number 1, the number of networks over which the transmission occurred. Number 2, the number of repetitions, that is, the number of individual transmissions. The duration of the violation, the number of days in which the violation occurred. Number 4, the audience reach of the transmission, in other words, nationwide, regional, or local. And number 5, the extent of the public safety impact, in other words, whether the EAS activation was triggered. In response to the complaints, the Enforcement Bureau's Investigations and Hearing Division sent letters of inquiry to Viacom, the Walt Disney Corporation, ESPN, and NBC Universal, dated April 8th of 2013. It directed each of the companies to submit, amongst other things, recordings of the surrender trailer and sworn statements whether they transmitted or caused to transmit that trailer. Each company admitted they broadcast the No Surrender trailer in programming that they supplied to cable and satellite systems for distribution to subscribers. And the No Surrender trailer did include actual EAS codes and the attention signal. And the EAS codes and attention signal were not included in their programming in connection with an actual emergency or authorized test. Despite these admissions, the companies each contest their liability for violating those provisions of the acts under the FCC rules. The Federal Communications Commission fined Viacom $1,120,000. They also fined NBC Universal Media $530,000. And they fined ESPN Incorporated $280,000 for apparent willful and repeated violations of the FCC's EAS rules. In the DX Audio Service studios, I'm Fred Vobey for the DX Audio Service.
In April of 1975, Australia's This Day Tonight news program revealed that country would soon be converting to metric time. Under the new system, there would be 100 seconds to the minute, 100 minutes to the hour, and 20-hour days. Further, seconds would become millidays, minutes become centidays, and hours become decidays. The report included an interview with Deputy Premier Des Corcoran, who praised the new time system. The Adelaide, Australia town hall was even sporting a new 10-hour metric clock face. TDT received numerous calls from viewers, one wanting to know how he could convert his newly purchased digital clock to metric time. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Before we go over to part two of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for April 2014, just a quick reminder to Audio Service members who are subscribing by CD. If you happen to have a problem with your CD,
doesn't play, or it's damaged in the mail, just return it to us and we will replace it at no charge. There's no need to call, no need to ask anyone what to do. Just return it and it's replaced at no charge. Also keep in mind that DX Audio Service programs on CD are not due until the end of the month, so please do not call and ask for a replacement until the 30th of the month of the issue. Finally, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about the DX Audio Service, be sure to get in contact with me here at the DX Audio Service. My address, email, and phone number is at the beginning of each edition of the DX Audio Service.